In the borderlands as well, the non-Russian borderlands, a variety of independence movements had effectively severed off large parts of the former empire. In addition to Finland and Poland, which were granted independence immediately after the Bolsheviks came to power, other lands as well declared and were allowed their independence. Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Ukraine, Georgia, Armenia, Azerbaijan, all became no longer part of the Russian state, the Russian nation. In addition, much of the western part of what was formerly the Russian Empire was now occupied by German troops as part of the peace treaty signed in March of 1918 at the town of Brest-Litovsk, which allowed Soviet Russia to finally get out of the war and have the Germans agree not to attack and invade, though at the cost of great loss of land, great loss of territory. Finally, as if this weren't all bad enough for the likelihood of Bolshevik survival, they faced the intervention of thousands of troops sent by more than a dozen different nations, the United States, Britain, France, Italy, Japan, Germany, all sent troops to Russia, mainly to support their efforts to move troops and supplies connected to the war, but also many of them turned against the Bolshevik government and were willing to help the White Armies. They, in fact, participated very little in the battles of the Civil War, but some of these countries, especially Great Britain and France, gave large amounts of money and weapons to the White Armies in the name of overthrowing Bolshevism. Despite all these pressures, the Bolsheviks won the Civil War. By February of 1920, the armies of Yudenich and Kolchak were completely destroyed. And the Volunteer Army, led by Denikin, the strongest of these armies, was defeated by the end of 1920. As a result, one could say that by the end of that year, the Civil War was all but over, and the Soviet Army, known as the Red Army, was victorious. Indeed, this was followed by action to restore, or in many cases install, supportive communist governments in much of the old empire, especially in Ukraine and Georgia. Obvious question, how could they possibly have done this? One answer is that, as the above list of opponents might suggest, one of the reasons the communists survived was the failure of their opponents to form a united and coordinated opposition. There were many of them. They posed a great threat, but they were divided profoundly. They were politically divided. The opposition, even in the organized white armies, ranged from moderate socialists and liberals to extreme monarchists. They were also, very importantly, militarily divided. The white armies lacked any central command structure. By contrast, the communists had one single army, the Red Army, under one single commander, Trotsky. The communists also had certain logistical advantages in waging war. The whites, as I've described, were ranged all around the peripheries of Russia, of the empire. The communists, by contrast, controlled the Russian heartlands. And this also meant they controlled the railways, all of which radiated out of Moscow, now the new capital. And Trotsky very effectively used the railroads in sort of rushing about the country to various front lines, returning to Moscow and going to another front as well. Became critical in success in the war, not to mention in supplying the troops. But there's also other reasons, one of them being that the communists were more effective than the whites in mobilizing resources, restoring order to the economy, and commanding various resources and supplies for the war effort. As I mentioned, almost immediately after the Civil War began, the government nationalized all industry. I had mentioned before large factories and banks. By end of 1918, all industry was now in the hands of the state. Strict labor discipline was enforced. Even forced labor, when necessary, was required to make sure supplies were made available for the Red Army. Food supplies were also assured. Remember how central that was to problems during the war, during the First World War. They ensured that the army had sufficient food, and indeed, as much as possible, that workers in the cities manufacturing for the war had sufficient food by a policy of forced grain requisitions. This was nothing more than sending out groups of communists and workers into the countryside with guns, showing up at harvest time, and demanding that peasants hand over a certain amount of grain, indeed a great deal of grain, at prices set by the government. And if they didn't, they'd be shot. The communists also were very effective at restoring political order over the areas they ruled or conquered as the armies spread. As they had not really done before, only during the Civil War did the government, the Bolshevik government, really set up a functioning state apparatus, part of which, indeed a good deal of which, was made up of soldiers who were believed to be the most disciplined. They also did what they could to control dissent and stifle opposition, and they did so as violently as it seemed to them was necessary. For example,